You are listening to CFRO Community Radio Station. The upcoming show, Conscious Living Radio, is a program that explores frontiers of consciousness, spirituality, personal growth, emerging paradigms in psychology, health, science, and innovative philosophies that reflect commitment to the advancement of individual, social, and global transformation.
Eoch tanuyap. Kwiget Iwans Kwiens Na. Hi everybody, my name is Kwiget Iwans. I'm a member of the Squamish Nation and the Yagalanis clan of the Haida Nation. You're listening to Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. We live, work, play, and broadcast from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations.
Welcome to Conscious Living here on 100.5 FM CFRO in Vancouver. We air every Wednesday at 6 p.m. for the past 15 years. And today I'm really excited to be sharing a conversation with one of our great friends from the spirit plant medicine world, Dennis McKenna, and some guests about his work. But first I wanted to introduce my good friend and partner in the spirit plant medicine world, Stephen Gray. Stephen, good to see you.
Hi.
What's going on, my friend? That's it. Just a hi. That's unusual.
Well, it's spelled H-I-G-H, you know.
Yeah. Suiting for the program. Yeah.
Well, I could say a very brief bit about our conference coming up again this year for the 13th time. Don't want to take too much of the time for that because Greg and Dennis have a lot to say about these films and the work they're doing. But I'll just say that we are heading into our 13th year again for November 1st and 2/3 in Vancouver at UBC. And we have another amazing lineup of speakers again this year. It's all but complete except for one or two, and the same degree of inclusivity and diversity is quite present and obvious in the lineup. So really looking forward to doing that again and sharing information and inspiration about the possibility of some changes on this planet, starting from the inside and going to the outside.
Beautifully said. Well, thanks for that, Stephen. And let's talk about our guests briefly. I'm going to bring them up and I'm going to duck out of the picture and I'm going to let you really lead the conversation with our friend Casey. And you can take it away with Dennis and his great work. So here's the rest of the gang.
Yeah, thank you so much for making space for this today, Mark. It's really helpful to have somebody take care of the technology. And work together as a team on this. Greg and Dennis have put in so many hours to make these beautiful films. Greg is the filmmaker behind both films, Biognosis, and also a project for, Back to Camp 41. Is it, Greg? Do you want to clarify on that one?
Back to Camp 41. You nailed it, Casey. Thank you. Yeah.
What was the inspiration behind all of this for you? Like, how did you get into this line of work?
Well, I've been working in film since the late 90s. We went to film school in 1995 and have been on big major movie sets all the way down to tiny little documentary crews. And over the years, I've been able to see the world and learn so much on a regular basis just by doing what we do as storytellers. Just before the pandemic, maybe it was 2018, I had the great privilege of meeting my now friend Dennis McKenna down in New York at an event. And I was explaining to Dennis a few of the TV shows that we wanted to pitch that had, loose associations to the healing potential of plant medicines in people's lives and whatnot. And Dennis immediately was very supportive and we started collaborating and discussing other ideas. And one of the ideas, I remember, Dennis, I don't know if you remember this or not, but I remember you saying to me, well, Greg, we don't have a big TV series idea, but I've got this really boring idea that you're going to think is boring. But there's this little herbarium in Peru, in Iquitos, Peru, that has thousands of physical plant samples, that is truly a representative of that that library of plants that the Amazon has to give. And we want to find a way to digitize it, and perhaps some film work could help us spread the word and gain some support around this concept. And I said, that's not boring at all, Dennis. That sounds absolutely awesome. So that was the beginning of Biognosis. And when we get to chat about Camp 41, I can explain the background of that as well. But yeah, that's how we've gotten to this point right here.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Awesome. I'm so excited to see all of the hard work that you folks have put into it. And yeah, just to connect with people and really spread the word about the importance of preserving this, you know, flora. It's crucial for not just people in the Amazon survival, but the planet itself, you know, so diverse. Yeah, I'd love to hear from you, Dennis, about how this feels coming together for you. Must be exciting.
Well, yes, it is exciting. I wanted to say, as Greg mentioned, we met in New York a few years ago. I think it was for the Psychedelic Film Festival or the Science Fiction Film Festival, one of those. And I introduced Greg to our friend and colleague, Sarah Hutt, who had made a short documentary called The Shaman and the Scientist, even shorter than our documentary. And so that was the connection. We showed that film at that festival. It was actually the Psychedelic Film and Music Festival, as I recall. And that's when Greg and I first connected, and we were talking about this herbarium project and our aspirations to digitize this herbarium, but not only digitize the herbarium, actually document this process and record the knowledge of the indigenous people, the indigenous communities that live around Iquitos, and particularly to try to document the knowledge of Juan Ruiz, who I've worked with for over 50 years. He's the curator of the herbarium, and he has encyclopedic knowledge of the plants in the region and the communities and the way that plants are used and that sort of thing. But he doesn't write things down. You know, he's not a print-oriented person, so it's all in his head, and he's not getting any younger, like all of us. We're all not getting any younger. But it's important to try to preserve what he knows in some ways. And it seems that because he's one of those people about whom it said, when a medicine man dies, it's as though a library is burned down. And Juan is the library in a certain sense. And so we settled on videography as the solution to try to begin to record his knowledge. And that was the genesis of the first film that we collaborated on, that Greg produced, and Christina Chaya, who was working with the Academy at that time, and Louis Solorat, who did the cinematography. And we put this film together, Biognosis, which was a description of this project, and introduced some of the characters, talked about the herbarium and the need to preserve not only the plants in the field, but the plants that have been collected and the knowledge base that represents, you know. And I've often said, if you can attach a piece of information to a plant, you have provided a reason not to drive it into extinction. You know, I mean, there shouldn't have to be a reason, but we live in the world where species are disappearing at an accelerating rate. But if you can identify a plant at a possible use or a possible significance, then that's a reason to preserve that plant. And that's what herbaria are all about. You know, they're the collections. And the fact that a specimen is in the collection means that it was important enough to someone, for some reason, to collect it. and preserve that knowledge. We want to bring that to the world. This herbarium is in a typical, you know, chronically underfunded condition in a developing country, but it's a gem in a certain sense. The fact that these collections are there in conjunction with Juan's knowledge, and it's a lens or portal in some ways into the traditional knowledge of the people in these communities, because they are immersed in the world of plants. They depend on plants for everything, for their clothes, their food, their medicine, their livelihoods, you know. And so the true symbiotic relationship going on between the communities and the forest, and the plants in the forest, all of these things are under threat. All of these things are buffeted by globalization, by climate change, by, you know, the habitats are disappearing, and along with the habitats, the traditional knowledge is disappearing. And these sorts of things, once this is lost, it's gone. You know, it cannot be recovered. So the Biognosis Project is just our attempt to plant a seed in people's consciousness, to kind of bring that to the attention of the world and hopefully garner the resources to proceed with additional documentaries, for one thing, and to document this, to build on the Biognosis documentary, but then also in the longer term, try to find the resources to digitize this herbarium and preserve these specimens, you know, in a virtual space online, so you don't have to go to Iquitos to view the specimens. The information would be available to anyone. And this is what goes on in history collections these days. There's nothing that particularly innovative about it. This is just standard practice. Big herbaria, botanical gardens, and so on apply this technology. Where we are, we're in a place where that hasn't been done yet. And so we want to bring the resources together to document these collections and make it a nexus between traditional knowledge, which exists in the minds and stories and songs and traditions of the people, and science. And every plant in the herbarium is a portal into that body of scientific knowledge as well. The fact that it's even been given a scientific name is sort of the beginning, but then that opens it up to connections to other databases, like genomic databases and phytochemical databases, ethnobotanical databases, and so on. So we're trying to create this nexus, or maybe bridge is a better term, between the traditional knowledge and the scientific knowledge, that reinforces, and each one reinforces and enriches the other. And that overall is the goal of the Biognosis Project.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. Hats off to all you people working tirelessly on that. It just kind of reminds me too, like, say, you know, food is medicine. And if you go to the grocery store, say in the Western world, you know, oftentimes we think there's just one kind of potato or one kind of onion, but it's so diverse. You know, you go to places in the Amazon and they've got hundreds and thousands of varieties of potatoes, you know, all different colors and all of these different compounds and components to it that provide good health. So yeah, I think it's so important to be protecting biodiversity and raising awareness about all of those things. Yeah, that's really wonderful.
Yeah, it's a good example you mentioned, Casey. The potato originated in the Andes along with so many important foods that we use every day. In the Andes, they have 6,000 varieties of potato. Hmm. In global commerce, we use maybe 5. Hmm. You know, so there is that tremendous undiscovered, unexploited, and hence vulnerable biodiversity that really needs, because you never know that there is actually a p- Potato Institute that's located in Peru, the International Potato Institute. They're trying to preserve these strains because the genetics of these strains, the value other than the, well, the value's in the genes, in the sense that these genes may be genes for disease resistance and that sort of thing, or just the genes, some of these varieties can grow in environments where, you know, it, they're in novel environments, degraded soils, that sort of thing. Many of them grow at very high altitudes, so they're extremely hardy. And that is the kind of information that this project seeks to preserve. So, I'm doing all the talking. Perhaps Gregor should say something about. So anyway, we developed this BioGnosis project, this and this BioGnosis film together, and then Greg came out of his company, and they've done many kinds of documentaries in the environmental area, as well as other more in the ethnographic areas. But perhaps Greg would like to say a little bit about his film.
Yeah, thanks, Dennis. And
actually, BioGnosis is our film.
Yeah. No, listen. Yeah. I think BioGnosis is the film. It's owned only by the future potential of the inspiration that we can we can seize from it. And we really want BioGnosis to be, you know, the film that we're screening in Vancouver Monday night. Is just a seed, like you mentioned seeds a minute ago, Dennis. We want to do many more of these and make it a series of inspirational and educational short documentaries that will help people be inspired to take positive action in conservation of the lungs of our planet. And again, talking about bridges, maybe that's a great bridge to our event Monday night, which is called The Lungs of Our Planet. For anybody who's curious and interested, you can just go onto Eventbrite in Vancouver and look up The Lungs of Our Planet, and you'll find the information on how to get tickets. The other film that we're screening is a very special film as well. And for many people in the science realms, you may recognize the name Dr. Tom Lovejoy. And Tom Lovejoy is literally the person who coined the word biodiversity. So when you have a singular human who coined something in a paper many years ago as important as biodiversity, you know that this person has some weight. And so Dr. Tom Lovejoy and I, similar to Dennis and I in New York, everything seems to happen in New York. But previous to the pandemic, a good friend of mine and collaborator, George Schimmel, invited me into this orbit of Tom Lovejoy. He's a dear friend of one of Tom's daughters, and we were working together with Tom to do a series that we're pitching to National Geographic, and it was called Fragmented. Him, because one of his areas of research was really what are the impacts of fragmentation, let's say in the Amazon, but really anywhere in the world, on plant species and animal species and insect species and birds, et cetera. So if you carve a big road or a clear cut, what is actually happening? And his research showed that the amount of extinction is shocking. Anytime you create some sort of a fragment in an ecosystem, there are significant consequences. So we wanted to really create a series that would unpack that and make it kind of, you know, digestible by the common audience, the non-scientist. Unfortunately, the pandemic hit. And not only did the pandemic hit, it also happened that Disney purchased National Geographic right at that time, and their whole mandate changed. So that kind of more pure focus on science and science communication was less important than other types of programming that you would see today at National Geographic. All very good programming, of course, but it's just a different mandate. And then sadly, over the pandemic, Tom ended up getting cancer and very quickly passed away. And it was just a shock. It was a shock to the science world. It was a shock to the family, to the friends, a shock to us, because we were collaborating and developing this project together. And last Christmas, George and I and another fellow, Zach, were invited to join the family to spread Tom's ashes back in the Amazon, back at Camp 41, which was the research camp that Tom did so much of this globally important work. So it was a very special opportunity for me as an outsider to come and, you know, very carefully and just kind of stand back and, you know, join a family who's and friends and colleagues who are grieving and they're saying goodbye to their loved one in very special parts of the Amazon jungle and in the Amazon River. So Tom and Dennis never had a chance to meet each other in person, but both knew of each other and respected each other's work. It just felt like a natural fit for Monday night because both films are less than half an hour. They're both produced in a way to inspire people to care more about the lungs of our planet, the Amazon. And we want to use this as an opportunity for people to get together and watch a couple films, have a Q&A, and like I say, hopefully walk out of that, out of Conscious Labs. That's where the venue is. Walk out with a renewed love for this ecosystem that might not be next door, but it is completely connected to our everyday life, wherever it is that we are in the world. We're so connected, and the Amazon is so critical to our species' survival. So that's what we have on the slate for Monday night. Over to you, Casey.
Amazing, yeah. No, I like what you said there, too. And even referencing the pandemic, you know, I feel like ever since the pandemic's happened, people are kind of very isolated, and there's almost this hyper-independence. But like you say, everything is so connected. So just to get together in community and be able to talk about these things and kind of get over our differences. And you get so much more done when we can work as a team, you know, and just kind of be aware of these issues. It goes a long way. Yeah. And it's a lot closer than we think. It's not, we have a lot of our own, you know, we have biodiversity in Canada as well. It's important to protect all of that at home as well.
Absolutely. I mean, the Amazon, you made the point, Greg, and Casey, it's definitely true. Everything is connected. You know, the world is very small these days. And the Amazon is kind of a microcosm of what's going on globally with the planet. You know, the pressures on the Amazon, the disappearance of species, the change in climate, you know, the erosion of this knowledge base, what Wade Davis has very aptly termed the ethnosphere, you know, is being, it's endangered, and the habitats where the plants grow and where the people incidentally happen to also live in those environments, all of this is under pressure. COVID didn't help that situation. It made it worse because it increased the isolation. And, you know, that has made it worse. But I think that the purpose of these films is to kind of focus people's attention on this is what is going on in the Amazon, but think of it as a model of what's going on many places, particularly any areas of high biodiversity, you know, such as Casey mentioned, Canada, you know, like just last summer, you know, the impact of the enormous wildfires in northern Canada, which burned for months. This can't be good, you know, it's releasing carbon into the atmosphere at a massive rate, and the species are disappearing. Life is very resilient. You know, life will recover, but it takes time. Sometimes that time, those time frames play out in terms of not 10 years or 100 years. They play out over hundreds and sometimes millions of years. Mm-hmm. Life will recover. Life will be resistant, but it won't be the same biosphere that we live in now. And, you know, there's very little controversy unless you're in complete denial that human activity is the major catalyst that is destabilizing the homeostatic systems that keep life working on the planet, on the planetary scale. Jim Lovelock's Gaia hypothesis is not woo-woo, you know, mysticism. This is actually geophysics and hard science. I was just looking at a CNN report, or a report, I guess, in the New York Times recently. The oceans globally are warmer than they've ever been, you know, and this is putting a great deal of pressure on the marine ecosystems, and that's the basis of the world food chain. If we don't get this right, if the marine ecosystems collapse, then that will have a cascade effect. So there are many things to worry about.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, so Dennis, the price.
Can I say this really briefly? I think Greg has to get on his plane now, so he's just going to say bye quickly.
I'll just say a quick goodbye, and please continue to have this important dialogue. A quick reminder, if anybody wants to come to this event Monday night in Vancouver, just look up Eventbrite, look up the title, The Lungs of Our Planet, and you will find it. I'm sure in the show notes there could be a link as well. And just a massive thanks to you guys for being able to, you know, promote our event and give us a platform to discuss what these films are trying to do. And Dennis, I'm going to find an Uber and a train and get to your house for dinner by tomorrow evening. So be ready for me.
I'm ready. We're ready, Greg. We're looking forward to it. We'll coordinate. Safe trip.
Awesome. Thanks, everybody.
Don't fly Boeing. They forget to put the doors on, you know, fly.
Bring a t-shirt, Greg. Bring a t-shirt.
Right under here. See everybody. Take care.
Yeah.
So, Dennis, what I'm thinking of as you guys are talking about this is beyond the direct scope of your film, of course, but I just wonder if you have any kind of, you know, things you want to share about this. When you're talking about this biodiversity issue and, you know, and then there's the example of the potatoes, for example, where there are thousands of them and we have one, reminds me that a big part of the problem has been the capitalist economic structure that focuses on monocrops and exploitation of resources in these countries. So, you know, for this to be righted, as you say, it seems to me that there also has to be a lot of attention paid to reforming somehow. I have no idea how this sort of monoculture capitalist economic structure.
Yes, well, that's right. We have to seek a better model. I mean, corporate capitalism, corporate agriculture, monocultures, and all of this, again, represents a effectively the result of a century or more of ignoring what were well-established, well-incorporated indigenous practices for managing the land, you mm-hmm. know, efficient agricultural production and that sort of thing. Monocultures don't get it. Monocultures increase profits for corporations, but it's a zero-sum game in a certain sense, because it in the short term, it may increase profits, but the sacrifices that are being made as these species are lost, as different, you know, huge areas of land are degraded and rendered impossible for agriculture, much better to let local communities manage this and to bring the knowledge that they have from centuries of living in these environments. I mean, they do have the solutions, mm-hmm. and that's what keeps them resilient. But there's a great deal of external outside pressure that the corporations, that manage global agriculture don't factor into their economic models the environmental costs. Those are left to be paid by the rest of us. Well, the corporations mm-hmm. take their profits, and then but they don't contribute to the long-term sustainability and stability of these systems. It's changing, but it's changing very slowly, And in certain places, it's not changing at all, you know. Mm-hmm. So this is what, in part, what we need to bring people's attention to.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, I don't want to take you too far away from, you know, the specifics, the specific focus of these two really interesting and important films. But it seems to me that that issue of economic structure is on some level the central issue for the planet, because, yes, you know, we somehow need to get back to buying our shoes from the cobbler who lives down the street, you know, as one of 1,000,010 examples, right?
Yes. Yeah. We need to focus locally, particularly when it comes to food production infrastructures and that sort of thing. Local communities are able to develop appropriate technologies for their situation. You can't necessarily apply these globally. So that's the lesson that we're going to have to learn. And the sooner we understand that, the better off will be, because we can start adapting to it, because, you know, otherwise it will be forced on us and we won't.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. I wonder if in the time we have left, would it be appropriate for us to show these two trailers, and then that might be a good way to wrap this up, or what do you think?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, well, we've got the trailers ready to go. So if you want to set them up, Dennis, we can start with the one for Bionosis and we can go from there.
I'm concerned about something getting missed here, just in case. I'm guessing maybe, you know, Casey will say something about it at the end. But for people who are not going to be able to attend these films, you know, you mentioned like the chronic underfunding of the herbarium, for example. Will there be some information shared today about how people can donate and
yes,
help fund this? Okay.
Absolutely. Yes. Thanks, Steve. I'm a terrible promoter for the McKenna Academy, but if people go to the McKenna.academy, that's our website. There are places you can donate all over the place. And if you search on Bionosis, you will get an outline of what that, you know, what that program is in all its different aspects. And there are many moving parts. So if people want to support this, they can donate from the website. We're a tax deductible 501c3 corporation in the state, so donations are tax deductible. And you could also communicate with us. You can write to connect@mckenna.academy, and somebody will get back to you, hopefully quickly. So that's one way to do it.
Dennis, I'm just wondering about something. I keep hearing about this 501c thing. Can Canadians have tax receipts or whatever for our taxes if we contribute to these ones that have the American designation of
it depends. Oh. It depends. If a Canadian has U.S. income of any sort, you know, U.S. source, then it's tax deductible. Small donations you can claim as a tax deduction. There are treaties involved that are reciprocal, so it's possible. That's something that you'd have to really talk to your tax accountants about, I guess, is the main thing. But yes, there are ways to do it. And, you know, if you want to give an enormous, you know, very substantial donation to the McKenna Academy to support this work, don't use the donate button. Send us an email and we'll get back with the details of how to make transfers, bank transfers, and that sort of thing. So,
okay. Is the McKenna Academy registered as a charity in Canada?
It is not.
Oh, okay.
Not yet, anyway. Well, probably won't be. We were incorporated in Canada initially, and then we shifted to the States because we figured that was mostly where our donor base was, you know. But Canadians can contribute, and low, you know, modest donations, people can just claim them as a tax deduction. So should we, let's see, should we
Mark's ready.
Play these trailers?
I've got them ready to go, Dennis. Here we go. We're going to play Bionosis trailer for Dennis McKenna's and the McKenna Academy's upcoming program. Here we go.
Decimos que es nuestra riqueza, es el bosque, nuestra farmacia, nuestro hospital y también nuestro doctor. Lo que pasa es curandero, hay que ser responsable y estar tomando tus vegetales, lo que te va a dar tu sabiduría, y ellos ya te cuentan.
Por eso le llamo a mi doctor, maestro.
Eso no es importante, no perder ese conocimiento.
Que es la esencia espiritual.
Es labor de la persona que cultiva la ciencia poder explicarlo de un modo diferente.
Is important to try to reestablish that connection, and so the herbarium is the place where these things come together.
Every specimen is a node, a portal to a pool of information, a connection to the forest and the people that live there, and to the totality of human knowledge.
Y va a ser útil para compartir con todos los países.
We're going to go back to play a trailer for the Camp 21 that Greg was talking about earlier. So stand by and here we go.
Okay.
You know, as a kid, I was just interested in, I was interested in animals. I liked to be outdoors in nature. At one point, my father decided it would be good for me to go away to school. The first school on the list to visit is called the Millbrook School. And when I got there and discovered the school had a zoo, I decided this is where I want to go.
Tom was obsessed by the forests of the Amazon. It would perhaps be too glib to say that he could identify every bird he glimpsed fluttering through its branches and every tiny mammal that he caught in the light of his torch. But I know I would have been better informed after a walk with him through the depths of those forests than with anyone else I have ever known.
When he was in the hospital in December before he passed, he, with a twinkle in his eye like he usually does, he sort of crooked smile and said, well, I guess I'm taking you on one last adventure. And I think he knew that that's because this is where we were going to be bringing him.
Papa expressed that this is where he wanted to come back to Camp 21.
Did David Attenborough actually contribute to this, or was this a recorded elsewhere?
No, I think he was part. You know, they enlisted him for some of the narrative. I can't speak to that film too much because I haven't actually seen the full thing. So it'll be new for me when we show it at this event tomorrow night or Monday night. I mean,
Nice. Mark and I are hoping to be there.
I hope you can make it.
Is the plan.
That's the plan.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Dennis, I wanted to ask you, because we are showing this on Monday the 18th March 18th here in Vancouver. Where will other people be able to see this afterwards? Where will BioGnosis be available? Because I believe this is going to be the original screening. We're going to air it on Co-op Radio. If you're listening to it on Co-op, the Monday event has already passed, unfortunately. But where can people actually tune into the BioGnosis film specifically? Right.
At this time, we've been submitting it to different festivals, and it has been submitted to several. So we're kind of holding back for a public release to get it into more festivals, because once it's in a festival, then once it's public, then we can't submit it to festivals. So people can look at these different festivals and just Google BioGnosis and various places where it can be seen should come up.
Dennis, just out of curiosity, you showed a film at Tom Hatz's and Eden's conference this past summer. Was that a version of the same film?
Yeah, it was.
I mean, but it's been developed further since then?
I would have shown. So, yes, it was.
But this is a further refinement or development of it?
No, basically it's the one that we originally finished, and we showed it at the ESPD 55 conference in the UK in May 2022. Oh. And actually, people can view it there if you go to again the McKenna Academy website, mckenna.academy, and then you look at ESPD, which is a menu item. You can scroll down to ESPD 55, and you can see all the videos. And among those videos for ESPD. is my presentation of BioGnosis. So people can see it there. They have to put up with looking at me, but then they can watch the whole film. So that's that. ESPD stands for Ethnopharmacologic Search for Psychoactive Drugs, and that is a symposium that we did in the UK in May 2022, and it's 55 because it's the 55th anniversary of the original conference by that name held in 1967 in San Francisco under the sponsorship of the National Institutes of Mental Health. And so that was a government-sponsored event, but it was closed to the public. For the obvious reason, at that time the topic was controversial, and there was a book published by the U.S. government printing office called Ethnopharmacologic Search for Psychoactive Drugs, and that was very influential to me as an aspiring ethnopharmacologist. So I actually, 50 years later, determined to do a 50th anniversary symposium, ESPD 50, of the original 67 one, and then 5 years later we did ESPD 55. And the video presentations for both of those events are on the website, and we published from the first ESPD 50 conference, we published a double volume set. We published the proceedings of the 2017 conference together with the proceedings of the 1967 conference in a very nice collector's edition box set that people can order from Synergetic Press. And we have the symposium for the 2022 conference is in press and will be published later this year.
Hey, Dennis, while we got you, why don't you say a brief word about the fact that you did a second edition or a revised edition of your book, Brothers of the Screaming Abyss?
I can mention that. Well, you just did, Stephen. Thank you. I did a revised edition of my memoir, which I published in 2012. And then I added a Synergetic Press again decided to republish that book. So I added a 50 to 80 page additional section to kind of bring it up to date. And that's also available from Synergetic Press or on Amazon or whatever. And of course, it's a great story, as you can imagine. And I urge people to read it. It's not technical. Hopefully it'll be of interest to people.
Awesome. Well, I just want to say thank you to everyone who's tuned in to listen to this conversation. Thank you to Mark and Stephen for making time for this and putting work in to get this broadcast off the ground. It's incredibly helpful. Thank you, Dennis, for taking time out of your day to be here with us and to talk about these really important important matters. So, yeah.
Thank you.
We'll probably wrap it up here.
Putting this together. I think we can wrap it up. Any final closing thoughts here?
Well, I just want to thank you as always, Dennis, for your graciousness and your willingness to always come on even last minute to do a program. And I just want to let you know that you've always got a platform. Anytime you've got anything you want to share, any new work, you want a message you want to get out to our community, you're always welcome. We're always happy to have you as part of what we do on Conscious Living Network, Spirit Plant Medicine. We just really appreciate the work that you do in the world to make a difference for humanity. So I thank you for that.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mark and Stephen. You've been steady allies in this, and we're all in the same, we all are working for the same thing, which is basically to make a better, more livable planet. So I really appreciate your support and help.
And what we'll do, Dennis, we're going to throw all the links into the chats and descriptions wherever you're watching this on the interwebs. I know it's on YouTube. It's on Facebook for Conscious Living Network, Spirit Plant Medicine. It's going to be on McKenna Academy, yes. Facebook programs and social media. So it's out there. We'll make sure it's all populated with the links so they're easy to find. And you can always follow Dennis on spiritplantmedicine.com. And specifically the McKenna Academy. So
I should also mention, our own, the McKenna Academy started a podcast series, which is called The Brain Forest, if I can spell it right. Brain Forest Cafe. We have some very good episodes on there. It's on various platforms. But the best platform is probably YouTube. And I can send you and Stephen a link to the YouTube platform for that. And there's, again, various excellent episodes there, including a long interview with Dr. Barbara Thiers, who was the manager of the New York Botanical Garden Herbarium and created the world's largest virtual herbarium or digital herbarium called the CV Star Virtual Herbarium at the New York Botanical Garden. So she is an advisor on this Bionosis project that has 4 million specimens in it. So people can actually look at that online and get an idea what a digital herbarium is. The one in Iquitos only has about 50,000 specimens, but we haven't digitized it yet. So that there's plenty of material to explore, and you can link to most of it from our website. So, and Mark, Conscious Living website and so forth.
We'll get it all out there, Dennis. Absolutely. We'll make sure that it's shared in some emails that go out. We'll get it out there far and wide and whatever our reach is. And we're happy to share. And I got to say, Brain Forest Cafe, I love it. That's I love linguistics and plays on words, and that's fantastic. So, if there's any other closing comments, Stephen or Casey, and we'll wrap this up until next time.
Oh, just a plug for the conference again, Mark. Are we at the super early bird stage of ticket?
Not yet. We're going to be launching tickets May 1st officially, and we're going to have a few surprises coming up because we've got a lot going on with a summer camp out in Salmo this year. We're going to be doing an online summit where we're going to bring in the best of the best over the years. So stay tuned for that. There's lots coming down the pipe. Lots going on. So we're excited.
Great.
All right. Bye, guys. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in to Conscious Living Network, Conscious Living Radio, which airs here on 100.5 FM in Vancouver on CFRO Co-op Radio. Always happy to share some great information, consciousness-raising conversations for humanity, for the planet, and for a better everyday life for everyone. So thank you all for being here. Thank you, Dennis, for joining us. And we look forward to seeing everybody again in the future. Take care.
Likewise, maybe tomorrow night. Thank you again for
Monday night. Monday.
Yeah.
All righty.
Bye now.
You have been listening to Conscious Living Radio. For free show downloads, additional information about our guests and topics, or details about upcoming programs, check us out at consciousliveringradio.org.